Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Joseph Ellis. His new book is The Cause, The American Revolution and Its Discontents, 1773 to 1783. 1774 passes with the Continental Congress and into 75. And there are three men who represent the different views of this disorder between Mother Country, which is what the region calls it, Mother Country. George III, he uses that term before and after the conflict, Mother Country and the colonies. And the three men require a revelation of one in particular, the conservative, John Dickinson. Professor, what was John Dickinson in 74, 75 to the cause?
He was the single most listened to voice. He was the most prominent figure, and he was only 28 years old. He was educated at King's College at now Columbia in New York, and spent some time in the Middle Temple in London, very well-educated young man. But he's the kind of creature who would have simply never appeared in history if it weren't for this crisis. Crises create leadership or create the opportunities for it. And he has a series of essays under the title The Farmer, Letters from the Farmer, which frame out the American constitutional position. You cannot tax us. You cannot legislate for us. And our rights as Englishmen. He is temperamentally conservative. He really doesn't want to, in any kind of precipitous way, lead Americans over the abyss into the war. His most recent biographer, who has somewhat rescued him from oblivion, although there is a criminal college named after him in New York, John Jay, says he's the man who does the right thing rightly. And in that moment, in 75, the right thing is to declare our position, but not push it to a military conflict, to resist until the very end any eventual decision to become independent. And when that moment does come, in July of 76, as viewers of the play 1776 will remember, Dickinson refuses to sign the document. He does then go off to serve in the militia, the Delaware militia. So he's committed as a soldier. But unfortunately, his reputation suffers because he doesn't do it at that moment.
John Adams, the Puritan from Massachusetts, orderly. Again and again, my note says orderly. He calls them the numbskulls of Europe. What is his position toward the cause?
Adams is a New Englander. Dickinson I was confusing Dickinson with Jay for a second there. Dickinson and Adams is the person who believes that despite the fact that we don't want to be premature, that we have to recognize that trusting that George III will eventually come to his senses is delusional. He says, we are waiting for a Messiah who will never come. And so he's ahead of Dickinson, and he's ahead of most of the members of Congress or outside of New England. Remember, it is Massachusetts and New England that has been occupied militarily, and therefore they have the most at stake. And John and Sam Adams are the two people who sort of try to remain somewhat quiet so that they don't alienate people. But Adams is a revolutionary, but he's a conservative revolutionary, meaning, as we'll see in a second, I think, he wants to defer the full implications of the cause into the future, but he wants to move quickly to end our connection to Britain. And he eventually becomes first Secretary of War during the war itself.
Lexington and Concord, and then Bunker Hill. Critical to understand What about Bunker Hill influenced decision-making for the next 6 and 7 years of the war? The militia, Professor, you make again and again the point that the militia has a romance about it that turned it into a myth. What do we need to know about the militia now? What did it teach the British, especially on Bunker Hill?
Well, the militia at Bunker Hill were gathered behind redoubts and stone walls. And in those positions, they can be formidable. In more conventional battles later on, they won't. They'll run away very often. Bunker Hill, however, was, it was a victory for the British, but at a very, very costly costly victory. 2,200 men went up the hill. Only 1,000 came back. And one man in Britain said, a few more victories like this and the British army will be annihilated. But what the colonists conclude from this is a group of amateurs, militia, can defeat a professional army. And they are inspired by their own conviction, their virtue. They're not mercenaries like the British army is. Inspired, virtuous soldiers can defeat hired Hessians and British soldiers. That is not going to be easy or true down the road, but it's a delusion that they have at the start of the war.
One more significant figure, because we're talking about how the colonists thought of their conduct. There are loyalists. There are people in between. There certainly are a great number of slaves in the South who are watching the reports of what's going on in New England. And now Tom Paine, 37 years old. What is his position toward the cause? How was he regarded?
Tom Paine is a newly arrived immigrant from England. As you say, he's not a young man. He's 37. He comes with a letter from Franklin saying he's a man of parts with some ability to write the English language, which certainly turns out to be true. January of 1776, he now resides in Philadelphia. Paine publishes what might be the most successful piece of journalistic writing ever done on American soil. He writes a pamphlet called Common Sense. It's written in plain, ordinary language. It's not as legalistic as most of Adams's writing. And its point is that we're not, it comes down to simple things like an island cannot rule a continent. Does anybody seriously believe that monarchs talk to God? And it demonizes the British monarchy, and it suggests that if America's break with England, victory in the war is inevitable, and that the rights that we're claiming, however, are not just the rights of Englishmen. They're the natural rights as all human beings. This is a student of the Enlightenment, and I believe that we've reached this moment when we've tossed off, we've exited the cave and into the sunshine of the new day, and America will be the nation state that is the first nation-sized republic, and it sees everything in grandiose fashion and makes it inevitable that America's will win the war.
Professor Joseph Ellis, The Cause is the book. When we come back, enter George Washington. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.